I definitely learned to tell no much often than 2 years ago. Because, you know, from the beginning, when someone from the States was, you know, writing me the email, I was like, oh, someone from the States is writing me the email. But when it happened, you know, for a 50th time, I was like, okay, I'm not even, you know, looking where the person is from. I'm just looking at the product. I'm looking at the team. And I'm looking at the character of the person that I'm talking with. And this has changed me and my business, you know, drastically.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast, where I show you that you don't have to be a natural born entrepreneur to build a business that gives you time freedom, location freedom, and financial freedom. My name is Ryan Helms, and in just 27 months, I paid off over $209,000 in debt, quit my 9-to-5 job, and started building my dream business that scaled to six figures of income in less than 6 months. And on this podcast, I'll be sharing exactly how I did it and bring on some awesome guests that are either doing it or have already done the same thing. So if you're a freedom chaser and you want to fast track that process, this is the podcast for you. And also, be sure to head over to gritandhustle.co to grab your free copy of the Side Hustle Journal. But for now, let's hop in to today's episode. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Hustle to Freedom podcast. And just like the previous interviews, we are catching up with some past guests here. And I am super excited about this one because we're chatting with Ivan Zatko. Now, we chatted with Ivan. The interview aired April 1st, 2018. I think we actually did our interview around like March 13th or 14th, 2018. So it's been not quite 2.5 years, but getting there. So we're going to hear about what's happened in his life. How has he pivoted? In our first interview, the thing that I asked him was, you know, where do you see yourself 1 year from now? That's kind of how we wrapped up the conversation. And where he thought he was heading and where he is now is not necessarily in the same place. So we'll hear about the evolution of that, what led to that, how some of his projects and products have evolved in not only like how he's selling them, but in the growth that they've had. So we'll be diving into a lot here and catching up with Ivan. So with that said, Ivan, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm glad to be back, Ryan.
Yeah, man, for sure. I'm glad to have you back here, especially because we've got a lot to chat about. So if you kind of think back on where you were at in, you know, early 2018, March, April, around that time frame, one of the things that we talked about in that interview was you had this journal that you had been working on. And at that time, you talked about how you crowdfunded it and you sold, I think it was a couple hundred copies. And then you went and you got it in like a local bookstore chain, and you sold, I believe it was 1,500 copies through that channel. Is that still a project that you're actively working on? Like, how's that been evolving over the past 2 years?
We grew a little bit in numbers and in the team as well. This thing, which was, you know, just on the very, very beginning when we were talking last time, in April, I think it was around 1,500 copies sold, which wasn't bad. I mean, it's still written in a local language in a small European country. But right now, we're maybe around 9,000, 10,000 pieces already. We don't have just one product. We have six different notebooks and then a different product category that's, you know, growing even faster than the notebooks. So I definitely cannot complain about this.
What is the new product category?
Posters. Because the thing is that we try to get the inspiration abroad. And I know in the States, these posters of the national parks are a big thing. And we somehow realized that those posters were not present here. Like, no one was doing posters of you know, nature and the mountains. And since we have amazing mountains, that's probably the nicest thing about Slovakia. Not necessarily Alps, but just, you know, a little bit smaller. We started digging into that. Right now, we've done 15 posters. Each of them was limited edition of 100 pieces done by different local illustrators and artists. And all of them are sold out. And The thing is, Ryan, that the first one, it took around 3 weeks to sold out, okay? Then we released another one, another, and we built a community around that. And the last poster that we had was sold out in 5 hours. So,
oh wow,
this is you know, amazing, because this is completely different segments than the notebooks. And still, it just works, because you can, you know, apply the principles from the journal to the poster, from the poster to something else that we are preparing, and hopefully it's gonna be like that every time when we introduce something.
That's awesome. So you said you came across the idea of no one was doing that there, but how did you even have the thought to realize that, okay, people are selling these posters? Like, how did you realize people have been selling posters of national parks in the US and that you could in turn do that here? Was that like your idea? You guys were brainstorming as a team? Like, how did you even get to that point?
Well, my co-founder, you're right, he was in the States. He was doing, you know, this hike and like really nice trail through the national parks, and he was collecting all of them. When he came here, we went on a hike, and he was like, oh man, this sucks. We don't have anything nice to take away from this hike. Let's do this. And I was like, why not? I mean, we are already doing notebooks. We are already in the paper industry. We didn't know, like, what specific technology are we going to use. The thing is that we've done our research. We picked a really good manufacturer. We made a deal, and it just worked.
That's super interesting. I want to dive into a little bit about, like, so one major component of that, right? So you have the idea, you set up the manufacturing, but the thing that will actually sell the product is what is on the paper, right? The design, yeah, that's there. So you had to connect with, it sounds like, local designers to mm-hmm. get that done. Like, what was that process like? How did you find the designers? How did you come up with, like, okay, this is a fair payment for something like this? Like, what was all that like?
The thing, Ryan, is when we are doing the research for the first notebook, it took us probably around 1 year from the idea to the realization. Now it was from the idea to the realization, probably like 2 months, and maybe even shorter. The thing is, I have a list of people I want to work with in the future. It's not like really specific. It's not just the illustrators, not just the entrepreneurs, but these are just, you know, some people that I read about in the media. So we were like, okay, now we're going to need some really good illustrators, some really good, you know, local artists with a relation to the mountains and with a style that's like really close to ours. So I was like, okay, I have a list. I'm going to write 5 of them, and I will see how many of them are available. And the thing is, 4 of them were available. So in the first collection, we had, I think, 3. Yeah, it was 3 images in the first collection done by 3 different artists. And each of these artists has done a completely different job. But together, if we mix them, they are like really nice, you know. When you already have one, you want to have another one and another one. So, I think this was like a really good step, and everything just, you know, clicked together. I mean, I wasn't doing this for the first time. Obviously, we've done it with notebooks. We've done it with different. Because we don't have just, you know, one notebook. If you go to our webpage, we probably have 6 or 7 of them right now available for different categories and the different purposes. And with the posters, it was you know, the same. So we were following the principles which were already working in the notebooks industry with the posters, and everything was just, you know, faster and faster.
How'd you get the word out about the posters? Because like you said, it is pretty, like, at a surface level, you wouldn't necessarily think that somebody that buys a journal might also want to buy a poster of nature. Like, they may not seem like they're the same person. Of course, there would be some overlap. But so how did you, like, get the word out? Like, I'm sure you like, reached out to your existing buyers and stuff like that. But what else?
We've done something which I would never recommend to my client, because we're like, okay, we are really famous because of the notebooks. What if this things screws up. We don't want to be the guys who are really famous for the notebooks and the guys who screwed up the posters. So we've done a silent launch. We went to an event, which was, you know, a design market, a local design market, quite a prestigious one. And we didn't say anything. We didn't have a single photo on the social media. We just said, we're going to be here and we're going to have something new. Come and tell us what you think. This was all that we put out, you know, beforehand. And I think it was like the day one of the design market, and we've sold out like 70 maybe of them, which was, you know, amazing. Because people were like, awesome. Okay, so now you have posters. I like what you are doing. I'm going to buy them. But it's not just because of the design. You know, design is just one of three elements. The other thing is the quality of the paper and the quality of the print. It's not just, you know, any paper. It's the best paper which we could find from 50 different samples. We ordered a paper from Italy. It comes to us. We pick only the highest quality. And also with the printing, we are using one of the old technologies for print. It's not digital, it's not offset, it's something completely different. And it just, each poster, thanks to this technology, turns out to be like really unique. So even though it has small malfunctions and small errors in the color, in the pixels, it's not a problem because we signed each poster has its own number, and we say, okay, some of them are a little bit, you know, not 100%, but the people are enjoying that, this is great. And this was the second element, so the quality of the materials. And the third element is the connection with the NGO. It's a local NGO, so your listeners probably won't know it, won't know that. But from each poster that we sell, we give €4 to the local NGO that fights the deforestation of the forest. So they are trying to prevent the forest from being chopped off, and they are trying to maintain the forest as they are right now. So we already like fundraised for them €6,000, which isn't, you know, only a small amount of money. These are really money which can make a difference. So
yeah,
these three things combined, I think all equally, I cannot say factor one was more important than factor two and factor two was more important than factor three. If you count them together, and you use the synergy, this is how we got the word out, and this is how the posters spread.
That's awesome. Now, like I'm curious about the pricing structure, because you said a lot of things that in theory could drastically impact the margin, right? Highest quality materials, unique printing technology, or probably older printing technology, which isn't maybe as easily found or more laborious, time intensive, etc. And then you said that you're giving away €6 of
four.
The revenue, €4 of the revenue out to the NGO. So like, what does that do for margins on a project like this?
The thing is, we weren't thinking about margins. Like the same thing, like I told you about notebooks, we weren't thinking about margins when we were launching that, because we believed in the product. And that was the same thing with the posters. We said, okay, at the end, after we cut down all the expenses and the VAT, then we have around €8 left. Okay, what do we do with this? We're gonna like spend half of the profit that we have, and we're gonna give it to the NGO that does a really, really good thing. So, okay, if someone comes to me, Ivan, as a consultant, and tells me, okay, this is my margin, this is the price, because we're selling them for €25. So this is approximately, you know, the ideal product markup is times three. Meaning, if you are selling something for 25, it should cost you no more than €8. But in our case, this is completely nonsense, and it still works. And even from the smaller margin, we are giving 50% to the NGO, and people are feeling that, and people are, you know, buying that also because of this. We are trying to communicate, okay, guys, this is not something that we are, you know, just doing for the purpose of doing things. We really believe we can make a difference and the change the perspective of people that are buying those.
And it probably also helps really build your community as well, and which will then, I imagine, translate into sales, into other products, and then into future products and things like that. So it's not about, for you guys, it sounds like it might be also playing the long game as well, right? You're getting new customers, you're building that customer base, you're helping people, the philanthropy side of things. So
it's a really fun thing that all of these things which you mentioned are only, you know, secondary for us, because when we were starting the company, we didn't say we're gonna do this because of the money. We're gonna do this because we believe in those products. And these things which you mentioned, like building a community, increasing sales, and, you know, all the other really nice things, you know, financially, are just the secondary effects. We are not doing this because of that. We are doing this because of something else. And this is, you know, just a synergy of all the activities that we are doing.
Yeah. I mean, I always hear, there's a guy that I follow, and he always says that, you know, being an entrepreneur, the money is the side effect of providing value, right? You provide value, and value can be anything. It can be direct value, like somebody, you teach somebody something, or it could be value in the satisfaction somebody gets from seeing a poster hanging on their wall, right? Yeah. That affinity they have with that design. So no, I totally agree with you. Value, I mean, money is a side effect of putting value out into the market. So 100% agree. Cool, man. So in addition to the journals, when we chatted, you were huge into the crowdfunding space. And in fact, what you told me when we wrapped up that interview, well, to back up a little bit, you had worked on a couple really successful projects. You did the minimalist socks that are kind of thing, the Skinners.
Yeah.
So you did that. That went really successful. You had a couple others that were all funded successfully. I think some of them, maybe just one of them didn't get brought to life, but it was funded successfully. So you had at this time you had the 100% success rate consulting with crowdfunding projects. And you, when I asked you, what do you want to do 1 year from now? It was all around like, hey, I want to have more crowdfunding clients. I want to build a bigger team. I think you had a partner. You said he was in like Barcelona or something. And you were like, I want it to be more than just me and him. So like, what's like, where has that gone? What's changed with that?
I'm smiling a little bit because this didn't turn out exactly the way how I planned it, but it turned out even, you know, better. Because the thing is, we had the interview in, you said, March 2018, right? So me and my wife, we were expecting a baby. Now my son Michael is almost 2 years old. This July is gonna be 2 years old.
Congrats! And I don't think you brought that up on the interview that your wife is pregnant.
Yeah, probably. I just didn't think about it. But the thing is, with the crowdfunding products and with the level of my you know. When I start something, I really dig down into it. And with the level of commitment that I was giving to that, I was afraid that I will miss all the important steps in my son's life. So eventually, what it did to me, I've done a couple of more crowdfunding products and crowdfunding projects. I think I'm the only one that still can say I've done 10 plus products and still has 100% success rate, because like I said, I put my full commitment into that, but it's just super, super time consuming. I mean, with all the launches and 2 months of preparation, 3 months of preparation, then 1 month of campaigning, then 1 month after, and I was doing 3-4 projects at the same time. It was like a super, super time consuming. So what I realized is that I didn't find joy in doing the crowdfunding as a campaign manager anymore. And I just stopped with that. And I switched more into a way where I consult the work of the
Can I pause there for a second? What was there something like... So I'm sure it was like a gradual, like, I'm not really enjoying this as much as I used to. But like, what happened where you like flipped the switch and you were like, eh, maybe not so much anymore?
I think I took a break of 2 weeks when Michael was born. And that was probably the first break ever that I've had from working, because this thing, you know, this crowdfunding thing was going on for 4 years, probably. I mean, it was growing gradually. First, I wasn't doing just the crowdfunding. I was doing the online marketing in some startups as well. But then I was doing only the crowdfunding. But after these 2 weeks, I realized, okay, these 2 weeks were really pleasant. I got time to spend with my wife. I mean, Michael was a newborn, so obviously I couldn't play with him or do anything. But I said, okay, there will come a time when he will need me, and I don't want to be the father that sits behind the computer like till 10, from 5 a.m. till 10 p.m. And it's just, you know, making money. So I said, okay, there are other things which are more important than the money for me. And I said, okay, I build a renome in crowdfunding. I'm not gonna just throw it away. I still can consult, but I will do this in a better way. So from the moment when I made the decision, I've already consulted more than 100 products. But this is more like guys come to me about the questions. Okay, is this a fit for crowdfunding? And I ask them a few questions. I usually say, no, don't do this. You will lose a lot of money. You will lose a lot of time. They do it anyway. I'm not helping them, obviously, because I said, okay, you're not going to be a good fit for crowdfunding. And they are still struggling. And then they come to me, please, Ivan, we know that you've done this. But I'm like, okay, no, I told you once, I'm not doing this product because I don't think it's a good, you don't have the economy behind the product. There were a couple dozen similar products which were successful or weren't successful, but this is not something new for crowdfunding. Don't do this. If they do it, it's their fault, not mine. And I can still, you know, focus on my family, on my company, and products with a higher value. From time to time, there comes a product which is really, really good fit for crowdfunding. And in this, let's say it's every fifth product that I consult. And the guys have a community, they have a unique idea, they have a small team which is capable of preparing the graphics, writing a script for the video, preparing a campaign page, at least, you know, in a way where I can take it and say, okay, I'm going to move it to the next level. But usually it's, you know, 5 hours that I give to this product, which really can make a difference for these guys. I'm not charging any, you know, success fee or anything like in the first case. I'm just, you know, trying to give them as much value for my time as possible. And this makes me much more fulfilled from the work that I do. Because first thing, it's not just two or three projects at the same time that I can help. But I, like I said, in 1 year or year and a half, I've helped 100 products with the decision not to do crowdfunding or with the decision to do crowdfunding and do it better. So my value is, you know, higher. And on the other hand, if there is something that I can see that's a good fit, guys can raise much more money. And I'm not so stressed like before. And I'm also not working like hustling from early morning till late evening. So I know these are, you know, things which probably aren't popular in some circles. And, you know, with all this toxic, you know, hustle culture, I was part of that. And I was like, okay, I'm young. I want to be successful. I have to work hard. But the thing is, you don't have to work hard. You have to work smart. And this was one of the smartest decisions that I've made in my, you know, professional career. That still influences me, and I'm, you know, much more happier, much more satisfied than 2 years before when we were talking last time.
Yeah, no, totally agree. I know, you know, like as you begin to grow a business, like one of the things that, because I'm trying to remember. No, when we talked, I didn't have, so I have an agency now, a content marketing agency. I was trying to remember if I had it then. No, definitely did not. It wasn't until like 9 months later. But like one of the things I've learned is like, just like, you got to like figure out like what your sweet spot is, like what do you enjoy? And also like, what are you best at? And for me, it was like the systems and the processes and things like that within the business. So, and then once you can build that stuff in, then it frees you up even more because you can create like stuff that runs itself more or less in the background. And then we recently started doing some consulting stuff as well. Actually, we just did our first one probably like 2 weeks ago. It was something we didn't even have out there as an offer, but somebody was like, hey, we're launching in like 2 weeks. Like, we put a lot of time and effort into this. Like, can we hop on a call and ask you some questions? So we hurry up and created like an onboarding process for that. And like, how do we get information from them? And it was super fulfilling. And it was, I really liked it because unlike a client that's on retainer that we're producing content for, like the work is like constantly coming in and you're getting the next thing. But with consulting, it's like, they come in, you provide a bunch of value, and then they go do the stuff that you told them, and then it's like it's done. So there's pros and cons, right? You don't get the invoice every month, but at the same time, it's kind of like you provide all the value, you kind of like pour your heart out, you give them as much advice as you can, and then you don't have to, you know, spend the hours and hours and hours doing the execution.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I've done this, and I've never regretted it like a single time in my career afterwards. I mean, it was definitely one of the best decisions that I've made.
Yep, for sure. Cool. So like, where, like, is this where you want to, do you still want to stay in the crowdfunding space? Is this like, as far as like the whole thing?
I've worked so hard to get there that it would be a shame to, you know, just say, okay, I'm done with crowdfunding. I'm not doing any of that. I have a new webpage. My old one was recently updated, where I have more references. I'm trying to, every time when client agrees, I'm trying to write a really, you know, deep dive into data of the campaigns. I'm trying to give as much value as possible. I mean, like, I'm not sure if I was mentioning this last time. I'm not really sure when this happened, but I was republished by Medium's largest publication, The Startup, twice or three times. Mm-hmm. And each of these articles had like more than 100K views, which is, you know, just impossible.
Oh, wow.
You know, a random guy from Slovakia can get this amount of, you know, views just by writing what's true, you know. The thing is, I'm not probably the smartest consultant in the world because I tell the truth. I mean, if I wanted to make the money, I would say, okay, this is perfect product for crowdfunding. Let's do this. Let's raise millions. I've met a few consultants that were like this. They're probably not doing this because they burned out or someone was, you know, someone's really unhappy with them and ruined their careers. This has never happened to me because the thing is, okay, if you want to do crowdfunding, let's call. The first consultation is for free. I'm going to tell you if this is a good fit or not. If this is not a good fit and you're going to do this anyway, you're going to struggle and, you know, you're not going to need my help after that. So, like I said, I'm doing a lot of, you know, pro bono consulting, which is just to say, to people, don't do this. Please don't do this. This is a waste of time, waste of energy. And I've done this so many times that I can tell you, like I can tell to my clients or to people that are contacting me, don't do this. And I'm not feeling, you know, bad like I used to before.
Where is the crowdfunding industry going? Like, is it evolving? Like, is it getting bigger, smaller? Is it evolving into something different? What's going on as the industry?
It's maturing. That's the thing. So there are so many frauds on the crowdfunding that if you are launching a crowdfunding campaign and you are launching it because you want to try crowdfunding, it's not going to work because you have to have like a really, really unique idea that no one has done before. And in this case, crowdfunding is great for you. But if you are doing, you know, another notebook, another sock shoes, another glasses, another anything, then it's going to be harder and harder and harder to succeed because people had seen similar products. You know, the failure rate in crowdfunding is, you know, around, I think I don't have the exact numbers here, but I think only around, 30% of the campaigns that are launched successfully raise the funds. Out of the 30% of the campaigns that deliver physical products, there is only 30% of the campaigns that deliver on time, and the remaining 70% either deliver late or they don't deliver. So if you are a baker and if you've ordered anything in the past, there is a high chance that it either didn't raise the money and, okay, you got your money back, but you were like, okay, this is a waste of my time because the guys, they didn't raise it. Or the second thing can happen, you've ordered it, it didn't come, or it came late, or it came in the worst quality than it was advertised. So you're like, now when I want to buy something, and let's say it's a hardware product, I would much rather wait for the product to come into wholesale, because I will much rather pay a little bit extra money and be secured. And I'm trying to explain this to the clients, and this is not something that they want to hear, So, like I said, crowdfunding is getting more and more mature. The conversion rates are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. I mean, obviously, I cannot do a big data analysis of Kickstarter and Indiegogo, even though I would love to, but all of the campaigns that I've done recently and I've had access to the analytics, the conversion rates are smaller, smaller, and smaller. Even when I compare the same campaign from the same company doing a different versions of the product, even though the version 2 was much better than the version 1, there was 2 years gap. They were doing everything properly. It's not like the images were worse or the video was worse. Like they even improved, and still they weren't able to raise as much money as they used to before. And this is just the fact, across all the segments that there aren't, any segments in crowdfunding that are currently booming. I mean, obviously the games are still doing well. There are some segments that are still, booming. Like the art things are doing well. The things that are, associated with the movements are doing like amazingly well on Kickstarter, because Kickstarter is, promoting them. But if we are talking about like products, like a physical products that you can buy, it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah. No, I've looked on there a couple times in the past, and to your point about what you said, a lot of people shouldn't do, you see a lot of people just trying to recreate the same thing with a little bit of twist on it. And like they've seen that 100 times before, it's not unique, or they don't express their uniqueness enough in it. So no, I totally get that. So like switching gears here a little bit. So two plus years have passed since we chatted. Like, have you had any big changes as a person? Like, because as an entrepreneur, one of the biggest things is what happens like in your head, right? Like how you evolve mentally, because it's just, to me, I feel like it's just a big mind game, like being an entrepreneur, yeah. Like trying to like better yourself and not let yourself beat yourself. So like how have you evolved as a person over the past 2 years?
I think I got much better at entrepreneurship. The thing is that having a baby changes you. It changes, everyone. Your sleep habits change, your routine changes. The thing is, I had to find a new way how to cope with life, how to cope with work, how to cope with my activities, how to cope with my growth. And this wasn't easy. There was definitely a period of maybe 6 months when I was, struggling a little bit. But then after, this black period was over, I returned and I was like much stronger than beforehand. I mean, things which in the past took me a day or two, I can now handle in 1 or 2 hours. Last time when we were talking, I had a really huge problems with emails. I hated emails. I still hate them. But I found Inbox Zero. I found a way how to tackle all of my emails, because the thing is, I have my my journal company. I have another company which I can talk about, you know, in few minutes. But then I'm getting some weeks. I'm getting 10 new leads. Some weeks I'm getting even more, you know, new leads. It all depends on the content. It all depends on some people which mention my name in some other podcasts. But you know, these things, they obviously take time, and it takes time to respond to the emails. So I got more organized. I think I'm much, you know, stronger as the individual. Last time, I mean, I'm still young. Next week, I'm turning 27 only. So, like, I still
happy early birthday.
Yeah, thank you. You're the first one to congratulate. But like, I still have my whole life ahead of me, and I think I've had enough, you know, of toxic positivity, of, you know, fake gurus promising you to get rich like really fast and showing you the screens of, you know, Amazon sales and telling you that dropshipping is the next big thing, Amazon is the next big thing, crowdfunding is the next big thing. You know, if someone wants to get rich, he needs to start doing something that gives the value to the people. Like you mentioned beforehand, you know, you won't get rich by sitting at the seminars or attending the seminars of people who got rich by organizing these webinars, you know. Yeah. And this is just, you know, a waste of time. And I think these 2 years have changed me in a way where I can say, okay, this guy's bullshitting and this guy's not. He's like really honest. And this is the guy I want to be working with. And this is the guy I don't want to have anything with. I'm not going to pay him anything. This was the only consultation that we've had. And yeah, so I definitely learned to tell no much often than 2 years ago. Because, you know, from the beginning, when someone from the States was, you know, writing me the email, I was like, oh, someone from the States is writing me the email. But when it happened, you know, for a 50th time, I was like, okay, I'm not even, you know, looking where the person is from. I'm just looking at the product. I'm looking at the team, and I'm looking at the character of the person that I'm talking with, you know. And this has changed me and my business, you know, drastically. I'm not sure whether
Books, anything that you consume that helped shape this perspective, or was it just a natural evolution of time?
I mean, I'm reading a lot of books. I mean, I even have a webpage which is called, you know, 3000books.sk in the local language. And I'm not kidding, because I made a reading list of 3000 books that I want to read or I've already read. And I'm just, you know, counting the number of the books that I've read. Right now, I'm somewhere around 40 books a year. So, in the last 10, 12 years, this is the average of the books. So I'm probably somewhere around 400, 500 books that I've read. So I definitely cannot tell, okay, there was only one book that changed my perspective. It's the synergy of all the books that I've read. Maybe one or two books, if the listeners are interested. Cal Newport, So Good They Can't Ignore You. That's the book that taught me how to... what to do with my career capital. Basically, all what he's saying, and I can save you 8 hours of reading this book, is to find something that's rare and valuable. Find the skills that are rare and valuable. So for me, this was crowdfunding. Or for me, this was, you know, first it was, I studied processes, okay? So this is, you know, more like I have a business background. I don't have anything to do with marketing. But I was like, okay, processes are one thing. Then I was really interested in doing something creative. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take this course. I'm going to learn how to do the online marketing. Okay, now I had processes and marketing. Both of them were quite generic, you know. But the thing is, if you combine processes and marketing, you basically get, you know, a Venn diagram of where in the middle is crowdfunding. Because crowdfunding is not just about, you know, processing. It's not just about marketing. You have to come up with a prototype, sell the prototype, and what's most important and what a lot of creators forget is that you have to deliver. and make sure that you deliver on time and on the quality that you promise to all of your backers. And this is something that a lot of companies are missing. You know, they have a good idea. They can make MVP. They can make a prototype. They can sell it, but they cannot deliver. And that's why crowdfunding is viewed by some circles as a scam. For instance, when I started doing the crowdfunding 5 years ago, it was easy to get into the media by saying, okay, I'm launching a campaign on crowdfunding. It's going to be live at the time. And the media just wrote you, okay, this is interesting. Or can you send us samples? Can you send us a press kit? Can you send us anything? Basically, it was quite easy to get into to get to the journalists. Now, when I'm writing, when I'm pitching, I mean, I'm not doing that anymore because of the shift of the crowdfunding managers / consulting. But when I was doing it, I was getting the same response every time. Don't write us when you are on crowdfunding. Write us when you are done. When we know that this is not a scam, and this after all of this, if you still have community behind the product, we're gonna feature you in our media. So, like I said, crowdfunding has matured. It's not what it used to be, but now only the ones that are really capable in marketing and the processes can handle it like well.
And that book was called So Good They Can't Ignore You. Is that what it was?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, cool. And you said there was one more book. You said two books.
The thing which helped me a really lot, Deep Work. I think it's, again, Cal Newport.
Both of those are by Cal Newport, right?
Yes. The thing is, a lot of self-help books are, you know, I just go through them. I'm like, okay, know it. This is not something new. I can go through the books, you know, just scan it in 30 minutes. I'm like, okay, this was of no value for me. But the books that Cal is writing, they really struck the nerve. I mean, after the first one, when I was reading that, I was like, okay, I can master crowdfunding because not too many people are focusing only on this. There are many good marketers, many good process engineers, but not many good, you know, crowdfunding guys. The same goes with Deep Work. I think what Carl offers is really, you know, action by action and the steps to master your personal productivity. I mean, for everyone that's out there and is having a job, a full-time job and a side hustle along that, you need to know that you have to work harder than most of the people. I'm not talking about, you know, toxic hustling like from the morning till you basically fell asleep and you just, you know, don't have anything in between. The thing is, you have to be really productive in your workday. You have to know when is the best time to call, when is the best time to do the deep work. For me, for instance, I tend to wake up quite early. I have most of my work ready by 9 a.m. when my son is waking up. So I spend hour or hour and a half with him. I go back to work. I do anything that's related to the deep work, not the emails, not the calls, until the noon. And then from the noon till 4 p.m. or till 5 p.m., I only, you know, consult, or I write emails. So basically, this is, you know, just a simple division of time, but it helped me to tackle more in less time.
How do you get in, like personally, how do you get in that deep work state? So like what you just said is like you're playing with your son and then you like hop into your office and it's like deep work. How do you like flip the switch and like get focused and dive into that? Is it just happens or what?
I'm trying to optimize a lot of things. One of them is sleep, so I need to have a good sleep, 8 hours. The other one is food. I'm not trying to eat anything, you know, sugar related. I'm trying to do intermittent fasting. So usually I start eating at 11 and I stop eating at 7 in the evening. So until 11, I'm not even thinking about, you know, food. I'm not drinking coffee. I'm not drinking anything else than green tea in the morning. And when I sit down and start working, I usually turn on Brain FM, which is, you know, just these voices that you get.
Binaural sounds or whatever.
Yeah. Or whatever it is called. And the thing is, it works amazing, you know. So I get into flow really easily after if I wasn't, you know, drinking alcohol in the evening, or if I didn't go to sleep, you know, at midnight, I can get into flow like quite easily, because I've done a lot of measures, systematic measures, to get rid of the things which were preventing me from getting into the flow, you know. So like if you are in the biohackers circles, biohackers groups, there are a lot of supplements that you can get, but this all comes up to the good sleep, good exercise, and good foods and habits and the routines as well.
Yeah, we've got a client that she's in the health space, and her whole thing is she's in like the weight loss space, but her whole thing, what makes her different than a lot of people, is she's like, you only need three things: real food, water, and sleep. Like everything else is just like, it's what it says, it's just a supplement, and it's going to be a small improvement, but those are like the foundations.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, man. So let's wrap up here. And we ended the last interview talking about, where are you going to be 1 year from now? A lot of things have changed in that previous prediction, and a lot of it for the better, right? You're in a much better place with your mindset. Your businesses are doing well. It sounds like your family is doing well. Where, if we fast forwarded 1 year from now, where is Ivan going to be? What's he going to be doing?
Since I'm a little bit older, I'm not going to tell you the exact activities that I plan on doing in 1 year or in 2 years. When we talk for the third time, and if I can still tell that I have time for my family, I have time for myself, I have time for my business, and I have time for my clients, and I can still, you know, be able to handle all of this, I will be happy. If nothing changes and if everything stays the same, I'm not trying, you know, to give myself a crazy growth numbers that we're going to be, you know, selling a million of notebooks. No, I think I'm over that stage. If I will be doing what I'm doing right now, if I will be still enjoying that, then I will be happy. So hopefully, if you ask me the same question in 1 year or in 2 years, I'm going to tell you the same answer. And this will be just the best thing for me.
Yep. You know, that's, I haven't got that response before, but that's good. You just want to be enjoying what you're going to be doing 1 year from now, whatever it might be, however things may take you, whether it's, you know, exactly the same or different or whatever, just being satisfied and happy with where you're at.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, man. So where can people check you out? I know a lot of your products are in your local language, which for most of the listeners here, about 80% of them are in the U.S. It won't serve them very much. But if they're interested in checking you out, you mentioned the website for the books you're reading.
Yeah,
you mentioned the journals.
I have webpage ivanzatko.com, which is basically an overview of the big projects that I was working on, not the smaller, you know, crowdfunding like 100 plus. They can book a free consultation with me. I mean, obviously, I will be honest. So don't complain if I tell you that your product is not a good fit for crowdfunding. I've had those clients that were complaining, oh, but I thought that you're going to save me. Like, no, I'm saving you because I'm telling you don't do this. So that's the number one. I'm trying to be active on LinkedIn, which is, you know, another thing which I was never focusing on, like ever. But during, you know, these corona times, I was like, okay, I have to clean my social networks. Otherwise, I'm not active on Instagram. I'm not so active on Facebook. I mean, I have a good reach, but I'm not using that for the purpose of, you know, getting likes or anything. I'm just trying to put, when I have something interesting to share, I share it on LinkedIn. So if you want to get the updates on what I'm working on, crowdfunding wise or product wise, probably my webpage and the LinkedIn and the Medium for the longer posts, more like data driven. Medium is the same if you just search Ivan Zetko.
How do you spell your last name, just for those that are
picking it up? Zetko.
Got it. Cool, man. Well, Ivan, it's been amazing chatting with you for the second time. It's really cool to see your evolution from when we chatted, two years and 4 months ago, something like that. A lot has changed for the better for you. So thanks so much for coming back on the Hustle to Freedom podcast, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So, if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.